What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself the Wire. The Wire podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire
and
talk about it. Mm-hmm. How you doing, there. Vince?
I burped a little bit.
Oh, is that what happened?
Doing good otherwise, yeah.
Yeah, good. Just a reminder for everyone. Please give us 5 stars in a review. Do that right now, you stupid bitch. Fuck you. I don't know why.
Dude, whoa.
I don't know why I'm starting angry.
Don't talk
but
to them like that.
No,
I respect
I love
these piggies.
I love all of the piggies. I love each and every one of you, and I would love more stars and reviews. And I would also love for y'all to please, this is the second to last episode, please email us. Frogcast@gmail.com if you have not heard your name, because this is time is a running out. You know, hey Vince, how's your camera?
I'm fixing it. It made it look better.
Oh, thank you. So time's running out. So please email us. Let us know. You know, if you haven't heard your name and you're like, it's been months, bro. That means you fell through the cracks, and we want to fix
we hate that. Like a queef.
Yeah, you fell through the cracks like a queef, and we would love for you to email us and let us know. Frogcast@gmail.com. Okay. Today, we are talking about the penultimate episode of The Wire.
God, once you discovered that word, there's no turning back, right?
It's like, I like that there's a cool word for second to last, you know?
Yeah. Penultimate episode.
It's the penultimate episode of The Wire, season 5, episode 9, late editions, and our guest today is someone very special.
Who do we have?
Is it
our best guest of all time?
It's our best guest of all time. It's our hardest working guest of all time. Mm-hmm. It's the nicest boy of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, comedian, podcaster, producer of this very podcast, our guest today is Brent Flyberg.
Hello, my boys. How are we?
So good, dog.
All my beautiful boys.
Thrilled to be here. Look at all of us strong boys all in one place.
Uh-huh. All together in one place being strong men. That's
such
what we are.
Such a
men.
Diverse cross-section.
Men.
Of
men. Men.
Men.
Men.
Men.
Men.
Men.
Men.
Men.
If you ever wondered
what...
We'll
work on the sync of that.
Yeah, if you ever wondered what the delay is, that's the delay.
Brent, you'll have to fix that in post.
Yeah, I got it. Don't worry.
Please don't.
No, I'm going to fix everything, and I'm also going to cut out anytime you guys say something funny, and then double anytime I say something funny.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be my best episode, for sure.
Yes, record yourself saying the thing we said in post, and then that'd be great, dude. Fix it with AI. But Brent, you have been here. Mm-hmm. You've been watching all of the episodes of The Wire, watching us talk about The Wire. Mm-hmm. But now I need to ask you a question that no one has ever asked before on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Do you like The Wire?
You know, I like it all right. I don't listen. I don't like it nearly as much as you guys, I think. I think it's
now
crazy.
Now it comes out, the truth, all this time.
It's good
like
seasons
out your
are...
finding grandma doesn't love you.
The good seasons are so good, but it's crazy to me that even, like, some of The Wire's staunchest defenders will be like, it's the greatest show in the history of television, but two seasons are really bad. That's like 40% of the show.
That's true. People do say that, which is very weird. I mean, it speaks to the strengths of
wrong,
those
God
other seasons. I agree that they're wrong. Well, I mean, I think we've made it clear that on this podcast, we love season five and we love all seasons.
I'm a season two defender. I think I had so much more fun watching season two and season five this time than I thought I would, just because I remember not really liking them. But
exactly,
no, they're still pretty good. But yeah, they're not. I mean, three and four. I hate to be the guy who's like, this season's good and this season's not, but three and four are so good.
Yeah, I know. Honestly, at this point, I think the worst season of it is the season six that they never did. Because there's not enough of it.
That's
other
just
questions.
The one that season is just David Simon calling people fuck biscuit.
And blocking them on Twitter for being anti-Zionist. Not that I have a specific grudge against Mr. Simon himself.
I feel like he used to follow me and now he doesn't. And I feel like he might have unfollowed me by association that I blame you for. So
I love that.
Congratulations.
That makes me feel good. I like that my own personal blacklisting can also destroy the relationships of my friends.
He didn't even give you the like shit waffle fuck.
I don't know when it happened. I was trying to DM him for something. And I just noticed that he unfollowed me. I don't know when it happened. It could have been unrelated, or I think I got onto one of those like Hillary men block lists somehow, like maybe like by making fun of Will Wheaton or something. And,
what's a Hillary man block list?
I mean, I just feel like around 2016, if you were like a certain level of Bernie supporter, like there was a Hillary supporter block list going around that was like these are toxic male leftist whatever.
And I would love to see that list because I want to follow all those people on that list,
because there's a bunch of random people that I don't know who they are or we've never like interacted, and I'm somehow blocked by them, and I was like, okay.
I used to be blocked by a lot of people, especially women of color. And I was like, what's going on here? and it all came to a head when an author of a fantasy series that I really, really liked. I was like, oh, I bet N.K. Jemisin's on Twitter. I should follow her. And then I was blocked. I was like, how? This making no sense. And I realized that it was back in the days when my handle was Lieb123456789. I got blocked because I had a string of numbers.
Okay. That does not explain mine. So that doesn't make me feel
No, you got blocked because you're toxic.
I guess. I didn't even really harass anyone that I remember.
You don't really harass people.
No, I'm too needy. I don't like to start beefs. I have a lot, like in my heart, I have beef with almost everybody, but I hate everybody. I try not to like, do it publicly.
Yeah. Whereas like, I don't even know if I hate my enemies. I just think it's funny when I call them, a shit biscuit.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't yet done that, but I'm gonna.
Yeah.
So, Brent,
had a lot of fantasies about, just being, just openly beefing with people now that I don't, like, I'm not working for a news organization.
Yeah, you can do that now.
Mm-hmm. I can't, though. But, yeah, anyway, that was a very good story. Yeah.
No, but listen, I fully support you having open beef. I just hope that what happens is instead of like a tweet.
If I wanted to have open beef, if I wanted to see open beef, I'd call your mom. Sorry. I had to. I mean,
as soon as I said open beef, I was like, this is going to be about somebody's mom's pussy. It's always mine. Listen, if you do ever start beef with someone, please do it via video. That would be, I always think it's better when someone like is, camera, face to camera, and just goes like, I've decided today I'm going to call out Hassan Piker, and then they go on and it's just like go after them and stuff.
Is this your way of announcing your beef with Hassan Piker?
Yeah, Hassan, I got a problem with you.
I only sort of know who that is, and I feel great about it.
No, I know who you are, Hassan Piker, and I'm tired of it. Stop being Turkish or something.
And you're not as tall as you're telling people. Yeah. You're not 6'4" or whatever. You're 5'11".
I've met you in real life,
it.
And you're 6'3" and a half, and I'm sorry to say it, top heavy.
Oh,
you
wow.
work on your top muscles, but you gotta do leg day.
Skipping leg day, dude. It's not good.
He's skipping leg day. I've seen his legs, and I'm like, you got too many shoulder muscles to have them little legs.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. He's got too many fans.
I feel like there's a fun thing. I feel like cable news talking head sort of exists for us to like argue about, even though no one actually watches them. Like there was a whole Ronna McDaniel discourse for like a week. And it reminds me of like the late night host discourse where it's like, oh, Jon Stewart is back doing this and Trevor Noah and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, none of us arguing about this have watched any of these shows for at least 10 years. And these jobs at this point, like they're just sort of peerage positions for us to like argue about whether that person is deserving of that title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like, it is also, it's a way to be like, hey, have you guys ever thought of watching TV again?
Well, sure. Yeah.
And people are like, no, but I will argue about it because I watch clips. Mm-hmm. But Brent, I wanted to ask you, so you're not that big of a fan of The Wire. There are other shows in this world.
Sure.
What do you like better? Okay.
Uh-huh.
And just rank them.
Okay.
Downton Abbey, Mad Men, The Leftovers, or Alf?
Alf number one, easy. Then probably Mad Men. I never finished the other two, but I would probably put Leftovers over Downton Abbey.
Okay.
Sure.
I had a great time with Downton Abbey, and then, I don't know, it
petered out
little,
at the end.
Yeah, it really peters out.
Peter out. It only gets better.
I loved that
it's
they
like
were
wine.
Willing to kill characters, but after a while it was like, I don't even know who any of these people are
anymore.
Well,
yeah, if you missed 10 minutes of Downton Abbey, that was like four plot lines. And after a while you're like, okay, this is a lot of continuity at this point, guys.
Listen, all you have to do to keep up is
who has written a letter about who?
Me was working in the servants' quarter and we found a gun, somebody's gonna be shooting someone in it.
I don't know much about that because I stay in a basement making tea for the boss, don't I?
Oh, it's me, I'm gay.
I'm still in prison. People still have me in prison. I didn't kill
my wife.
We've
been accused of rape,
I'm a Viscount. It's not spelled like it sounds.
It's not spelled different. It's got an S in it, doesn't it? Well, this is not a show. This is not a show about Downton Abbey, no matter how much
God bless
I
the four, the four people still listening to hear a Wire show.
No, this is a podcast about The Wire, and we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song.
When you pause. Through the garden, gotta watch your back.
Ow, my dick hurts. Ooh, put it in my dick. Suck it in my dick. Ow. Ooh, fucky.
The newsroom. Fake serial killer. Pod. Season 5.
Mr. Fuck.
So today, once again, talking from
what? What just happened?
I don't know. I'm just trying to entertain myself. I don't know. I don't need to play the full theme song every time, and so I just start
Sure.
Anyways, today we're talking about, once again, from season 5 of The Wire, episode 9, Late Editions. And this episode came on March 2nd, 2008. Vince, break us off a little piece of that synopsis.
Sorry, before I do that, I just want to say, like, I used to make fun of WTF with Mark Maron, and I wanted to start, like, a Tumblr where I put the timestamp of when his weird monologue ends and the actual interview
and then you begins, realize.
And then I realized that we just do the same thing.
That's
there's
us.
Like 15 minutes of being weird before we start the actual show.
Okay, yeah, but except for once we start the actual show, it still sucks.
It's still the same. It's not any different. Yeah. There's no.
And Obama's never on this one.
Yeah. No, Obama never
asked.
Shows up.
That's true.
That is true.
I bet if one of the Pod Johns hasn't blocked me on Twitter, I wonder if he could be like a go between.
I think
this
all
is his favorite show, and we have one episode left.
We have one episode
left. Obama, hit us up.
Obama, if you're listening to this. Sup.
Dude, if you don't shoot for the sky, you'd never reach the stars.
You'd never reach the stars, dog.
Synopsis. Via Google, Carchetti's chief of staff orders Rawls to initiate creative remedies for the rising crime rate. Freeman's vigilance provides a lead and sends the department into overdrive, and Michael is suspicious about his latest assignment.
That is exactly what had happened.
That's so much what happened. It's so crazy.
But I would like to know, what was happening at the time?
Yeah, we cannot evaluate our divorce from its social context. We got to put some of that cultural context back in, and we like to do that with something we call the back in the day machine.
It's a bad time for newspapers. The news hole is shrinking as advertising dollars continue to decline.
There ain't no back in the day machine tells the tale, son.
They've murdered the fuck president.
He's just going to come out of every bumper, like, just hot on fire. Today, we're going all the way back to March 2nd, 2008. That was the Sunday in 2008 when this episode first aired.
That's right.
And we have a lot of, I got a lot of context to give you. First of all, I think I want to start with the fun one. The fun ones usually come from the New York Post. Headline, Oscar winner, I doubt 9/11.
Okay.
Do you have any guesses which Oscar winner it is? I already told you before the show.
Michael Moore.
No.
Second guess, Sean Penn.
No, you're wrong.
Third
on both
guess,
okay.
Le'Veon Rose Lady.
Yep. Oscar winning French actress Marion Cotillard. I hate when people have a name where it's the same sound in their first name and their last name, but then it's spelled differently in each. Like Marion is I-O-N and then Cotillard is I-L-L-A. It's sort of like the Timothy Chalamet
thing. That's true.
It's like, okay, you got
how should you pronounce Timothy Chalamet if it was consistent?
I just feel like it should be Timothy E-E with a little
accent
on it, and Chalamet E-E with a little accent over it.
I agree. Yeah.
Timothy Chalamet. There you go.
I thought you meant like it should be Timothée Chalamet or Timothy Chalamet.
Just fix it. I don't like it.
Fix it, Tim.
Oscar-winning French actress Marion Cotillard made waves across the Atlantic yesterday after it was revealed she doesn't believe the official story of the 9/11 attacks or the manned moon landings.
Whoa.
Okay.
Cotillard.
That second part changes it. Yeah. The first part, I'm like, a lot of people don't believe that. And I, you know, listen, hey, sometimes people hold on to things. That second part, it's like, oh,
yeah.
Oh no.
Cotillard, I always knew in the back of my mind that I felt like I talked to French people and were like, oh yeah, that lady sucks. And I was like, oh, she seems like a good actress. She's nice looking. But then I guess this is probably why. Cotillard, who won the Academy Award for her role in La Vie en Rose, told the French program Paris Premier, Paris Dernier, I don't know what that means, that quote, I think we're lied to about a number of things referring to 9/11. We see other towers of the same kind being hit by planes. Are they burned?
What?
I don't.
Excuse?
Wait, yeah, where did she see that?
Yeah, you mean in movie?
Where did you see that? I don't know.
God, they've got to stop asking actors questions.
No, I think it's great. I wish they would always do
it.
Yeah,
that's true.
In terms of America's space program, Cotillard said, "Did a man really walk on the moon? I saw plenty of documentaries on it, and I really wondered. And in any case, I don't believe all they tell me, that's for sure."
This is typical French jealousy. They can't handle 100%. That we went to the moon.
Yeah. 100%.
Or that we had buildings big enough to be targets, so they have to try to tear us down at every turn.
Yeah. You're still jealous because we did American Revolution before you did French Revolution.
Yeah, we took out England and you never could. You tried so hard.
You tried
and we
so
did
hard
it.
And England still stands. And what are you, like number four in Europe? Eat a dick. You know, why
they helped us beat the British. You know, they deserve credit for that. We couldn't have done it without them.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. I love.
Look, I'm the only Lafayette respecter on this podcast.
Respect Lafayette.
Never heard of him.
Lafayette was this like famous French homosexual. I'm kidding. No, he was.
Is that redundant?
Yeah, he was a
marquis. He was friends with Marie Antoinette and all the famous people. He was a rich little shit, and he was like, you know, badass, bro. Let me go to America and kill
some
English
do a revolution,
people.
And then you know, in France, he was like, oh, I'm a kind of do that here, and then there, he's like, I gotta escape.
Mm-hmm. I think they did eventually chop his head off.
Lafayette, they didn't chop Lafayette's head off,
didn't they?
Nah,
didn't he die in the revolution at some point?
Nah, he lived. He spent the rest of the revolution in an Austrian prison. And then finally he got out way after, like, I think Napoleon was in power. And then he lived till, like, you know, like, I don't know, the
ripe old age of 47. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he lived till he was like 18 years old.
Where did you guys learn all this stuff about Lafayette? I truly had never heard of the guy.
Listen.
You guys seem to be experts.
Well,
we had to read a book about Napoleon for a Napoleon podcast. And then I had to read a book about Benjamin Franklin to interview Michael Douglas this past week. So, you know, we've learned a lot.
You had to read a whole book about Benjamin Franklin to interview Michael Douglas.
Why don't you just
ask him the one question? Do you still have eaten pussy too much cancer? That's the only question.
No, I mean, he plays Ben Franklin in a show, and it's based on like some history book about a Pulitzer Prize winning historian's book about Benjamin Franklin in France. And I was like, well, that sounds kind of interesting. I'll listen to that.
Is it called Benjamin Fuckland? Because he went to France to fuck.
Yeah, you should write that.
I want to write Benjamin Fuckland.
Benjamin Fuckland.
Just naked, but he's got a beaver pelt on. Davy Cocket.
Doing the Burt Reynolds bear rug pose, but but with the gout.
He was our nation's horniest scientist. All right, go on. We got to talk about the wire at some point. Yeah,
I got an uplifting story to tell. Another story from the New York Times. A boss suspends peace talks with Israel. Israeli aircraft sent missiles slamming into the office of the prime minister of Hamas-ruled Gaza on Sunday, pressing forward with an offensive that has killed nearly 70 Palestinians in 2 days of fighting, while the moderate Palestinian president suspended peace talks with Israel.
I'm glad that they're still doing the Hamas ruled thing, like, to this very day. At least then, you know, it was only like 2 years, 3 years after the election of Hamas. Now they just do it just to be like the guys, it's okay to kill ruled place. It's cool. Uplifting. They'll figure it out.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure. That's 2008. Yeah. It's been 16 years. I'm sure it's going to settle down.
It's all
get
good
it figured
now.
Out by
everything's,
now. Hopefully.
Everything's dope now.
Finally, pressure raised on Clinton to bow out. Top supporters of Senator Barack Obama, joined by at least one prominent but uncommitted Democrat, raised the pressure Sunday on Senator Hillary Clinton to bow out of the presidential nominating race if she fails to score clear victories in two big state primary contests Tuesday. "I just think that D-Day is Tuesday," says Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico, a former Democratic presidential hopeful who has yet to throw his weight behind either candidate. And a lot of weight it was.
It was a bunch of weight. It was a big boy. Was this for Super Tuesday, are they talking about?
I think we already had Super Tuesday. Okay. This is a different Tuesday. He said that the increasingly negative campaign advertisements aired by both Democrats made it more urgent that the party unite quickly behind a nominee.
Yeah. I remember it was just like, you know, Hillary would be like, Barack Obama's a Muslim. And Barack Obama would be like, Hillary's a bitch.
They did. Yeah, they said that. Mm-hmm. But I think we're properly contextualized now.
I now understand what is going on in Wires. And before we get into it, this week's Balmer B story, you know, listen, I think I talk a lot of shit about my own work. And this week's Balmer B story rules. Here it is.
Hell yeah.
I love it. I can't wait.
Oh, Lord, can you hear me?
Yes.
From buried underground, you curse my name. I wasn't formed. And said I'm not a man for this town.
It's bad religion.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the MCU just took us down. Got Cheese, Chris, Monk, and Marlo downtown. Monk is saying, what if Michael Lee is a snitch? Mentions Omar calling Marlo a bitch. Did he use my name in the street? Tell me what that dick suck said about me. Tries to reassure him he was just talking shit. But Marlo will remind him my name is
Marlo.
Yeah, my name is
Marlo.
And my name is
Marlo
Scanfield. I'm such a dork.
All right.
I kept thinking you were going to go into head voice there, but you're like, nah, I'm going to just belt it. I'm just keep belting it. Just
nah, dude, no falsetto on this one.
No, nah, dude.
You know?
I liked it. See, you lose me with Jeff Buckley, but then, you know, when you go back to
I get you right back with Bad Religion.
Yeah, you get back in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, exactly. I had to make up for last week because, you know, last week's song sucked.
All good.
I liked it. Yeah.
Oh, thank you, buddy. So this is the famous, infamous My Name Is My Name episode.
My name is.
Hi, my name is Chick Marlo Danfield.
Can't believe you didn't do that.
I could have done that, but that's take longer to do. So yeah, it's the My Name Is My Name episode. It's the How's My Hair episode. It is like, it is one of those episodes of The Wire season 5 in which you kind of go like, you go, hey, I thought this season was supposed to suck. And yet it has two of the most memorable moments of the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, yeah. Thoughts, general thoughts. Vince, what'd you think of this episode? I'm sorry, maybe, Brent, you look like you're about
to
talk.
No, but I was going to. You always ask me first. Yeah, you already stole my analysis. I know Brent's going to talk some shit. And here's the thing. First of all, George Pelicanos episodes, he usually writes the second to the last one of the season. They always rip.
He always pens the penultimate.
He's the penultimate Penn Smith.
He's the ultimate penultimate.
That's right. I thought this episode was great. And like you said, how's my hair look, Mike? One of the most memorable lines in TV history for me. Like going back to this season, it felt a lot like, and I hope this isn't too obscure for people, but like I rewatched The Nick and I remembered The Nick falling off in the last season, but then I rewatched it and it was like, no, they had like maybe one and a half not as good episodes in the final season, but overall, like it was still really good. I kind of felt like that way about this season of The Wire, where it was like they had the one sort of off episode that McNulty directed. And then you come to this and I thought this one was just those hot fire.
Yeah, I agree. Brent Flyberg, what'd you think of this episode?
Yeah, pretty good episode. I love any episode where you hear something that turns up in a rap song later. The Wire may be the most sampled television show for rap songs.
It might be.
So I love that.
Which one are you talking about in particular?
It's the name of a Pusha T album, and I think it's on a Pusha T song. There's the thing about, there's a Freddie, early, I think first season in a Freddie Gibbs song, they sample the part where he says, if you get the count wrong, somebody will beat your ass or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a bunch of different things that are in various rap songs. And as I was watching The Wire again, I was like, I was doing the Leonardo DiCaprio thing with all of my favorite rap songs. Yeah. But no, I think that this episode, all the Michael stuff is incredible.
Yeah.
But some of the stuff, maybe I'm dumb or I wasn't paying close enough attention, but there's like two scenes in this where I didn't understand what was happening as it was happening.
Interesting.
Yeah. Some of the like cop jargon like was over my head, but it was quick enough that I didn't really care.
Okay, but go. I want to hear what confused you.
I had to watch the conversation that Lester and what's his face, Clay Davis have. I had to watch that twice. I kind of like missed the first time that he tips them off about the guy who then Rhonda catches or whatever.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That one I was kind of like, I didn't know what was going on there.
There's a snitch at the state house, or at the grand jury,
The scene that made me feel dumb was when they go to the evidence locker and they call the phone. I think part of it is that, like, I don't know what Rhonda, her reaction when the phone starts ringing looks to me like relief and not disappointment. So I was so confused the first time I saw that scene. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't get the phone switcheroo, but I'm like, they'll tell me. They'll tell me what I need to know by then.
The phone switcheroo there is at that point in the episode, Kima has told Daniels what McNulty did. Basically invented this fucking serial killer in order to set up a fake wiretap on that serial killer. But the number that they set up was not from any serial killer, but in fact from Marlo. Mm-hmm. So after she tells him that, Daniels tells Marla, you know, or not Marla, tells Rhonda what had happened. And they get the number from the wiretap. They go down to the evidence room. Because they know they have locked up Marlo's phone and they wanted to see if the numbers matched. So they called it and his phone started ringing, meaning the entire serial killer phone number wiretap was actually Marlo. So it ringing is the indication of that.
I think that makes sense, but they just confuse the issue a lot with the dummy cell phone number that they called to be the serial killer. Like, there's a whole lot of cell phone switcheroo, but I don't feel like you needed to know.
I mean, all the point of that scene of them finding out that, you know, the phone is ringing was so that we could once again see our best boy, our big drunk man, who is now, I think, sober. He looks sober, but he's working at the evidence room.
Augie's
back.
The show when you're through, would you, sir?
Thanks, Augie.
Augie, glad you landed okay.
Yeah.
Beats working.
Good for him.
He landed okay. He's in the basement, you asshole.
Yeah, but he wants that. Remember?
He doesn't have to do anything.
Yeah. He's literally going to just like...
No, but he wants to drive around to pretend to do stuff.
He's just looking at pornos all day long. Yes, he loves it.
Exactly. He's looking at, like, you know, Irish jugs, you know, Scottish pussies magazine, and is just like, oh, this is nice. Whereas, like, you know...
Do you know who that guy is, by the way? I feel like we've discussed this before.
Who is he? Say it again.
He's the brother of Peter Benchley, the writer of Jaws.
That's right.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
Like, hey, you know that shark guy? That's my brother.
Yeah, that's my brother. My brother made Shark Movie.
Their parents must be so proud.
Yeah, they're both doing great. But that's mostly the point of that, is to see our boy Augie again. I love this episode, and it's once again, you know, it makes me very comfortable doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on this season is way better than everyone remembers. You know, again, you have to be someone who accepts the serial killer thing in order to like it. And as someone who has accepted it, and as someone who is like now fully, you know, we're over the part where you know, the shortness of this season has been its biggest handicap. Like, at this point, you know, we're watching episode 11, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's episode 9, but I know it's 11. Never forget.
I mean, it does, it is sort of painful to be like, there's only one episode and Templeton has still not gotten caught.
Yes, but he's about to. And a big portion of this episode
sort of
is, well, I mean, he's going to get caught at least by Gus, because Gus is investigating
him.
Gus
is hot on his ass.
He's hot on his ass. Like, he can tell this guy be lying about all sorts of stuff. So you see him. Gus throughout this episode is basically just scratching an itch, as he calls it. He's digging through a lot of past stories. He's hiring his friend who used to work in like some Baltimore
Sun. Bureau.
Yeah, the London Bureau of the Baltimore Sun, you know.
Oh, hello. Has you got any news about the Queen?
Yeah. Well, it turns out they're shuttering our bureau, yeah? So now I gotta go back to the States across the pond, innit?
Oh, and have you had like trout?
Oh, I gotta go get a trout from a lake. Yeah.
You know, they love a soft fish over there. But yeah, so he's, you know, he's hired his friend to, you know, to do some digging. Meanwhile, he's just getting thrown fucking like evidence of Scott's, you know.
Yeah, every
lies.
Single story that Scott has done has had some form of blowback at this point.
Yes. You see Alma at one point talking to Daniels, who won't give her the time of day because of, you know, some lie that, you know, that Scott told. You see Gus having lunch with Nerys at one point, and
there was that quote about how if someone's getting their head cut, like Daniels gave him the knife or what.
It's yeah, like if that, someone's that getting quote, stabbed in the back, Daniels gave them the knife or something
yeah,
like that.
I don't even understand that. Like, how would he have done that? Like, what is that? It's a weird quote that doesn't make it.
I
it
would
sounds
want
like a newspaper quote, but I have no idea what it actually means.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically, you know, the idea that, like, Daniels was secretly gunning for the job.
Right, but how does one aspiring police chief undercut another? Like, anyway.
I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
There's ways, dude.
Doesn't matter.
I don't even get into it, but there's ways. But, yeah, and then eventually, you know, so Gus, he decides to do a little bit more digging with that Marine who came in and was like, hey, your boy lied about everything. So he goes to Walter Reed. And I have a clip of him, you know, doing some digging there.
Hold on a second.
You got the military records back from the Marine Corps?
3 weeks at least, it said. Sorry about that.
Well, that day wasn't no Black Hawk Down thing. You know, when shit went bad, after I lost my hands, them Abu Dhabi motherfuckers weren't even around after the shit went on.
Could Terry have exaggerated?
He lied about combat because he weren't there. And Terry was. Two tours. He's got stories if he wants them. Just not on that day. He ain't lied all day. Sorry to say.
That rhymed.
It's just good ass writing. That's just a well written, like,
yes.
Pelicanos writes the shit out of some dialogue. And even
yes,
if you
does.
Don't necessarily care about the broader storyline, like,
it does everything.
The progression of words is so good.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a good scene, even though I kind of was watching it and feeling like, do we need more of Gus finding out? He knows. At this point, he knows.
Yeah. Worth it because of how well written that scene is and how well acted that scene is. And and also just like, it's also a perfectly reasonable explanation as to, like, well, who's lying here? If you're Gus, you know, and not the viewer.
You sort of go into that scene thinking, like, how can Gus prove definitively that Scott Templeton changed this guy's story that he overheard and didn't just, like, write down the wrong thing? And how is another, like, hearsay account going to, like, be evidence one way or the other? And then that guy lays it out and you're like, ah, okay.
Yeah,
made a pretty compelling case there, and it's like eloquent and
talking the way
that we all wish we talked.
Yes, and not eloquent in a way that makes you feel like it's written. It's like like the perfect encapsulation of why I love The Wire. It's just so like it explains in a completely rational manner the point of view it's coming from, and it does so in a way where there's that verisimilitude, and it's just nice to listen to. And it's at the end of the day, it's mostly a scene with a guy who has no hands being like, one day I'm gonna be able to flip someone off, and you're like, this rules, everything about this rules.
Sorry, did you also get distracted by him moving his fingers and being how the hell do you do that? Like,
I don't know, dog.
What is the science? Brainwaves?
That's no, I don't know. I think they connected to his like forearm nerves or some shit.
Yeah, something crazy. Like that.
Crazy. Okay.
Yeah, isn't that nuts? Yeah.
So can you go like this? Can you go?
Jack off. Yeah. That's a crazy thing about having robot hands. It's you're always doing the stranger. I'd make so them true. Girl hands, and when people ask why, I'd be like, you know. You know why.
Yeah. I mean, this is corny to say, but you know, people always compare The Wire to a novel, which is true, but also like part of the reason it works so well is because the staff is all writers. Like the staff is like all novelists.
They're all novelists.
Lehane, the other guy who wrote Clockers. Like it's a bunch of like good novelists that David Simon was like, hey, you want to write on this show? And they're like, sure. And so yeah,
Peter
you get a
Benchley's
well-written
brother is around. Yeah. I'm sure he's influencing.
I mean, you get a. I don't think there's that many novelists on staff of other shows.
Of anything. Yes. Yeah. And if there is, it's usually because their shit is being adapted into a whole fucking series, and they're going like, this sucks, and they're like, fuck you.
Yeah. This is off topic, but I don't know if you guys heard, but they're doing a reboot of Boondock Saints, and Troy Duffy is not directing it, but the note on there is he plans to continue the Saints story in a series of books, which just the idea of
good.
The Boondock Saints novelization.
I'm gonna call them Bookdock Saints. Give the biggest dumbass a budget who writes Bookdock Saints. I forget what we're talking about. Oh yeah, there's novelists. Everyone, it is like a novel, and it's just very well done. And meanwhile, you know, this season is also very TV, and it's got a lot of great moments. I think one of my favorites is this now third and most hilarious callback to the Dickensian aspect. Scott is in a meeting with his like, you know, editors and stuff. And the meeting is about planning how they're going to do their Pulitzer Prize presentation. Yeah. And Scott, being the kiss ass that he is, just tells them what they want to hear. Yeah. And
again, this is such a deftly written, like it's so hard to explain to someone why one thing is poverty porn and another thing is a service journalism.
Yes.
And
yes.
Like in this, it's just so, it's so like, it's so easily explained, like transparently explained, where one guy's trying to get to the root of whatever the problem is, and the other guy's just like, no, people like it when you write about poor people.
Yeah, people like when the streets are cobblestone and all the kids are orphans.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the hope is only one of them gets out. Just right. One.
Yeah.
And I have a clip of that scene.
Think this is a shot at a Pulitzer?
I do. And it does. Now, being on the Pulitzer board for a couple of terms, I've seen the process up close. Knowing how is why they pay me the big bucks.
All right. What do we want to say about homelessness? I mean, it's bad, but isn't it actually symptomatic of a much greater dynamic?
Like, we want to rediscover a world that for too long has been ignored. Examine the tragedy underlying these murders, the neglect.
The Dickensian aspect.
Yeah. Exactly.
This fucking bitch is just, he's sitting there nodding his head thinking about like whatever new lie he's gonna come up with, and he's just like, oh yeah, Dickensian aspect. Came up with that.
Yeah
Oh god.
Yeah, it's
I
a great
it.
scene, because that's every job, is there's some dipshit who can just repeat what the boss says and keeps getting rewarded for it even though they suck.
Think there's a broader push, like probably in every industry, but you have salespeople that sell the product and they have to come up with like punchy little sound bites for like why you should buy it, and then, which is fine, like you have to have a thing, and then and then marketing for the thing. But like we're constantly collapsing the difference between the marketing of the thing and itself, where you have the marketing people coming in and be like, hey, could you make it more exactly what like the corny sales pitch of it is?
Yes.
It's like, no, that's your job. Like, yeah, that's what you do.
Yeah, you just sell it to them, but it's like, no, I'd like to.
I'm the writer. I actually have to find like a story here and not like a sound.
No,
bite,
more and more, okay. It's just like, it's basically just being like, why are we wasting money actually like killing a cow, turning its meat into beef patties and putting ketchup and mustard on it when we have these nice shiny plastic guys that we take pictures of for the poster? Why don't we just serve them literally that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the arc of Elon Musk's career. Like,
yes,
he
100%.
He was a great salesman. Like, he got in on PayPal. He got in on Tesla, where like he did a great job of like selling the idea of Tesla to the general public. And
right.
Then everybody was like, oh, this guy's like the genius
inventor
of Tesla. And then, he actually has to like do hands-on stuff, it goes completely to shit.
Right, because he doesn't know what he's doing. He's a fucking idiot. The problem is that we think those guys are smart, and I blame Steve Jobs.
We also think that sales makes money and everybody else is just dicking around. Like,
right.
I mean, say if you're working in like a software company, like you have the coders, they're making the actual product, but then they always be like, well, why does the salesperson make more? It's like, well, do you know how much money they make for the company?
Right.
It's like, yeah, they make money selling the shit that other people make. It doesn't mean that they are more valuable. That's just the difference. That's the breakdown of the work, but it's always... Yeah, we did that where we... Like,
yeah, at some point we confused who was talent and who was support, and we decided that sales was talent and like the coders were support, when really it's the other way around. And same with the newspaper. It's the writers, but it's like, no, actually the boss is going to get us the Pulitzer. That's the talent.
Yes,
it's like,
exactly.
No, that guy's he's a leech. Who cares?
Yeah, you don't reward the sales by letting them like handle the product. That's not what they're good at, and that's not what the point... Anyway, I'm digressing. But
yeah, the point is Scott fucking sucks. And,
such a perfect little shit, though.
He's a perfect little shit.
He's like the obnoxious toady like everybody's had at a job and hated.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, so we'll find out in the final episode of The Wire what goes on with Gus's investigation of Scott and where that goes and what happens with the Pulitzer or Pulitzer, if you're...
I was going to say, I like that they had the diversity of pronunciation there, because I always like reflexively say Pulitzer for whatever reason, and then other people I hear say Pulitzer, and it comes out of my mouth wrong, and it never works for me, and I wonder if I'm doing it wrong or what.
I feel like Pulitzer is like the, I don't know, it's the Prop Joe accent way of saying Pulitzer. So the big storyline going on in this episode...
Wait, should we take a break first?
Oh boy, fuck. It's time. It's time to make money. It's time to make money with ads. And we cannot do that without first playing the ads. So stick around, everyone, and we will be right back with more Potters on the Wire. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s. And he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but
yes.
It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. Okie dokie. So the big storylines that are going on in today's episode of The Wire is it's finally happening. We're getting Marlo Stanfield in jail.
Drugs on the table.
Drugs on the table. You know,
the spread beef.
Yes, the beef is spread. And everyone's going knee deep in that sopping wet beef. And
they're covering it with horsey sauce.
Yeah. Well, yummy, yummy, yummy. It's spicy and it hurts. And and so, yeah, we start off with Sidner and Freeman are, you know, they're looking at the clocks and they realize that one of the clocks is a fancy one that doesn't have numbers. And they're like, oh, these they don't say this, but they're like, these fucking yo's wouldn't have a clock that has no numbers. So they realize that they are on the main stem. They are on the stash or on the ship.
I actually didn't even pick up on the no number. It didn't have numbers on it.
He looks at it all confused and he's like, damn,
what was that indicating?
I think it was indicating that like this, the person who sent that clock has a nice watch. Or has like a nice clock, like doesn't have a dollar store, you know, clock, has like a good one. I don't know, man. I never cracked the
clock code.
I'm sure they explained it, but the clock
code is it's a map grid. So one hand refers to the X axis and the other one is the Y axis.
Yes. And you get there within an hour, wherever that is. Yes. Yeah. You have to have like a one of those like Rand McNally.
They never explain where you go within that grid. Like, I mean, I imagine that grid is like 1 mile, 1 square mile at least. And are you just wandering around looking for
just waving a,
Are you drugs?
Do you have kilos of raw?
Are you drugs, friend?
I'm drugs too.
Oh yeah. Okay, we're supposed to trade. I have money, you have drugs. Pew pew. Now I have both. Okay. So so they crack the code, they get over to there and they arrest everybody. They arrest Monk, they arrest Cheese. They get all these motherfuckers. And what I love is that once this finally happens, Freeman is like, time to go fess up. And so he goes to Daniels and you think like, whoa, what the fuck does he mean fess up? And what he just means is like, he's just going to admit that he's been like going after
Marlo.
Doing
awesome police work for a while.
Yeah, just, yeah, yeah. By fess up, he means he's going to brag about how good his police work is, but he needs Daniels to quickly get arrest warrants for all these people.
I like that there's the direction of this episode because I feel like we get more full body shots of Freeman than we have in many of the other episodes. And I feel like that adds a wrinkle to his character. You get to see his like bull legs and his funny little walk. It's great.
Yeah, he is. You know, it's interesting. I realized the same thing. I was just like, oh, he's kind of a funny looking guy.
Yeah.
But here's Freeman fessing up.
Time to fess up. What? And we wrapped on that Clay Davis thing, and instead of shutting major crimes down, we took a couple of weeks and got
back. I like
back
how big his shirt
Marlo.
Is.
I need teams to arrest Marlo Stanfield, Chris Partlow, and Cheese Wagstaff. I also need someone from our SAO to get on the horn to Ballmer County for an SNS warrant on a Middle River warehouse. And oh yeah, Bunk Marlin has a warrant on Partlow for a separate homicide. He held that back so we could do this business here.
Anything else you've neglected to tell me, Detective Freeman?
No, sir. I think you're caught up.
He is very much not caught up. He does not know how bad it is. But Freeman is... I love Freeman bragging here because I noticed that throughout this episode, you see this look on McNulty's face where he's like super pissed. And, you know, he gets drunk with Freeman, who is like celebrating at this point, you know, getting drunk. And McNulty is just mad. And at first I was like, oh, man, it's because, you know, listen, this job will not save you. Right. This is something Freeman has said. But I realize now the reason he's mad is because he doesn't ever get to claim credit for this.
Well, that, and he has to do all the fake shit. Like, he's painted yes. him into a corner mm-hmm. where he has to handle the fake shit and other people get to do the real police stuff.
Right. So yeah. now he looks like a shitty detective.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He still has his red ball. He's still like yes. buried in paperwork. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's got the whole city, you know, looking for some guy he kidnapped and threw into like a Philadelphia, you know, nut house. You know, and so like he's just the whole point of this was so that he would be smarter than everyone and be like, see how I'm the smartest. Yeah. But that only works if people know that you are pulling off this gigantic crime and nobody knows except for the people around him. And you can tell he's pissed about it because at the end of the day, it literally was just about his ego, this entire yeah. thing, which I love. Personally, I think that's fucking great. I love watching him be mad. I love Freeman celebrating in his face and then being like, I'm going to go fuck Chardine.
Yeah.
That's probably just my favorite moment in this episode. I have that clip of that.
You can celebrate with me. You can at least show for my drunken ass home. Chardine better be awake, too, because I do believe Lester Freeman's in the mood for love.
Meanwhile, McNulty is like, I think my girlfriend broke up with me.
Yeah. My life is in shambles.
Yeah, this sucks. Why do this?
My marriage is over and I'm probably going to get fired soon.
He 100% would risk going to jail just so everyone knew that he's the one who did it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. he doesn't give a shit. So yeah, so everyone is arrested, and Marlo is suspicious because, you know, he's like, they're claiming they have a snitch, but they don't know like who it could possibly be. And the one person that is plausible in their minds is Michael. And while Monk is explaining why Michael might be the snitch, he accidentally reveals this thing that's been going on this entire season, which is Omar walking around Baltimore just yelling in the street, Marlo's a bitch. and it is the first time he's hearing of it. And it is probably one of the most iconic scenes in the show. And I'm just going to play it just because it's just perfect. It's just everything about it is beautiful and iconic. And here it is.
Oh, Junebug and his people got lit up, crying about how Omar in the street running his mouth, calling for you to step too.
Omar said what?
Nothing. Omar tried calling you out by name, but shit, it wasn't nothing.
What he say about me?
Nothing, man. Just talking shit.
He used my name. In the street? Talk, motherfucker!
He just, you know, say that you need to step too and that. I don't know. He just running his mouth, son.
You call me a punk?
It was bullshit, man. You ain't need that on your mind.
What the fuck you know about what I need on my mind, motherfucker? My name was on the street? And we bounce from this shit here, I'm gonna go down in them corners, let them people know. Word did not get back to me. Let them know Marlo stepped to any motherfucker, Omar, Barksdale, whoever. My name is my name.
That is probably the greatest acting payoff for a character that I've seen on TV.
Yeah.
Like, Marlowe's character throughout this entire series that he's been on for three seasons. His whole thing was like, you know, what if a gangster was like quiet and didn't like to fuck? And like there's it worked for me because I was just like, you know, I was scared of Marlowe. I was like, you could tell he was cold-blooded as shit. Mm-hmm. But it's almost kind of like, I don't know, it's not cheating, but you know, a quiet, scary guy is you're never entirely sure if you're seeing acting or not, right?
Yeah.
And you know, there are moments in which I think he's great, and there are moments in which I'm like, this character is basically just like you staring at his two far apart eyes and being like, well, what a weird looking guy.
Yeah.
And he has not once since he's been, you know, on the show raised his voice. He's been like quiet, you know, that's his whole character, cool and fucking cold and deadly. That scene, I was just like, Jamie fucking Hector is amazing as an actor. Like that, yeah. That is so good that it makes you mad that this show didn't win any Emmys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it makes
like, especially in this episode, like top to bottom. I mean, Lester's incredible. Bunk is incredible. Mm-hmm. Daniels does so much work, like just with looks. And Michael is, you know, some like 15-year-old who isn't even really like an actor at this point, and he is just crushing.
Yeah, Dookie and even is
Bug.
Great.
Bug is really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking Snoop, who is straight up like not an actor, you know, is someone who.
There's a really good Snoop sound in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, it sounds like if you played like a 16-bit like fucking video game, like, you know, Sega Genesis or something, and just like, oh no, the snake's coming after me. Yeah. It's like, oh no, 10 snakes. But yeah, like everyone in this is like really at the top of their game for, you know, The Wire in terms of acting, and like, but nothing to me beats that payoff of just like, I've waited three full seasons of this guy and I finally get to see him pissed. And what he's pissed about is something that I literally cannot emotionally comprehend.
Yeah.
Like what he's pissed about is his already dead enemy at one point was just limping his ass on the street, stealing drugs from corner boys and going like, I hate Marlowe.
Yeah.
He's bad. And it's like, he's
already
dead now.
Killed. Listen, was talking shit.
Yeah. I knew he killed really all my friends, but I had no idea he was calling me a bitch in front of
strangers. Yes, exactly. It's so strange, but it just like the way that he, you know, explains it in that scene where he's just like, my name is my name. And it's like, I guess it is, dog.
Yeah.
I never thought about names like that, but that, your name is your name.
All he got is his word and his balls.
All he got,
he don't break them for nobody.
He don't break them for nobody. First he gets the money, then he gets the power, then he gets the name, and that name is his name. But yes, it is fantastic. And then, and then in that moment they decide Michael has got to go, and that is like one of those choices in this, like, season that I was like, this is the most obvious thing. It was like the thing you kind of saw coming. It was like Michael is going to be doomed if he stays in this crew, because this crew seems to kill their own guys for the smallest infraction, for just like, you know, any suspicion of snitching or anything. They kill people for talking shit, right?
It hit home for me because I feel like I've been in a lot of jobs where, like, okay, I didn't believe in the mission statement, but like I didn't like openly defy anybody, right? Or like,
you did your job.
Yeah, I did my job and I didn't undercut anyone, and I, you know, I did the job well. But like, as this scene proves, like, all you really need to do To be suspect to management is just not kiss enough ass.
Right, not drink the Kool-Aid.
Like if you're just visibly too much of an independent thinker, like it's going to be like threatening to people above you.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's like the difference between Scott Templeton and Gus is like the difference between like Michael and Cheese, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like Cheese is just, you know, he's kissing the ring. He doesn't give a fuck. He has no pride. He got his own fucking uncle killed. He doesn't care
about the job itself. Like he sees power and he's like, okay, I need to flatter this power.
Yes, he's a sycophant. He's like sitting there with Marlowe and he's like, the Dickensian aspect, right? You know?
Yeah.
Your name is your name, right?
Your name's your name. I've always said that about your name. It's the most your name of all names. And like, you know, Scott's the same way, sitting there just like kissing ass. And meanwhile, you know, Michael is like, he's got some questions about like, hey, should we just kill this guy for no reason? That of course, you know, is a lot like Vince Mancini.
That's right. I'm exactly like that. I'm just like Mike, you know. They taught me to show up early. And
always show up early
and bring your iron. And that's
I get there early.
I bring my iron, you know, when I'm blogging.
Me too. I have my gun right here. I wish I had a gun. It'd be so funny as a fucking visual bit if I pulled out a gun and said, I got my gun right here.
Like John Morant.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be sick. Like John Morant. So Michael, you know, Snoop goes up to Michael and is like, hey, I got this murder we're going to do. Just make sure you don't bring your gun. And Michael is just like,
pack a lunch, no gun.
Yeah, pack a lunch, no gun. Make sure no bulletproof vest. And also write a will. And
don't worry about watching your back. We got it. We got you.
Yeah. Don't worry about your back. Your back's fine. He's suspicious immediately. And so he's tailing Snoop and just watching, you know, what Snoop is up to. And I'm not entirely sure what he learns from sitting around watching Snoop.
That was another scene where I was like, I don't really know what's going on. I don't need to know exactly, but I know that Michael is watching and he's just getting more suspicious. But what is Snoop doing? I don't know.
I think this is all just me applying like logic after the fact. But I feel like he's watching her try to keep tabs on him. Like they're supposed to kill this other guy, Lil Walter, or Big Walter, or whatever the fuck.
The one with the big nose?
Yeah.
He realizes that she is not staking out this Walter guy that they're supposedly killing. She's probably keeping tabs on him. I don't know. Again, I mean, it could just inserting logic.
They're not doing
a
great job of keeping tabs on him because he's right there.
Yeah.
They don't know where he's at.
Listen, Michael's fucking smart, all right?
Michael is smart.
He's smart. Say whatever you want about him. He's got like the smartest of the streets.
Yeah. He probably has like a, he's like, oh, I'm in bed, but he's not in bed. There's a pillow under the sheets with his baseball cap on.
Yeah.
Michael kind of realizes what's up. And then, you know, Snoop picks up Michael and is like, hey, we're going to, you know, time to go kill this guy. And I just love this scene. It's just, again, second iconic scene and also ends up being one of the most iconic scenes in the entire series, and I have a clip of that because it fucking rules.
Pull over in that alley right there. I gotta piss some fists.
What now, motherfucker? You shy? Smart nigga. You always was.
What I do wrong?
Chris locked up behind something he done for you. And you downtown with the police?
I ain't say a word.
Yeah, that's what you say. But it's how you carry yourself. Always apart, always acting wild. You should be doing what you told. You was never one of us. You never could be. How my hair look, Mike?
You look good, girl.
That's so good. You know what that is? You know what that is?
What's that?
That is the ultimate, I love when they're friends.
Yes. Yeah. Till the end.
Till the end. You know, we've stated multiple times on this podcast, we love when people are friends, mm-hmm. On the show, especially if they're enemies. You know, Prop Joe and Stringer, you know, it's just like, you know, Stringer
Freeman
and
Daniels.
Freeman mm-hmm. and Daniels, you know, McNulty and Stringer. Like, it's always nice when you see them be friends. And that, like, just to the end, just being like, your hair looks good. Mm-hmm. Just in case. I don't want you to worry that you look ugly when I blow your brains out.
And it's such a, so I read the Wire book, the oral history, and like mm-hmm. there was a lot of back and forth about like that line, like was it a good line, like was it in character for her, because like she's never, you know, like it's never stated that caring about her opinion, her appearance is like an important thing or a part of her character somehow. And I think it works in that sort of ineffable way where like you did sort of get the sense that she does like care how she looks, and that would be right. Like she cares about her rep, and like that might be the last thing on her mind. And it's just great writing. Like it's mm-hmm. not telling you something that you already knew. It is like putting a finer point on something that maybe you sensed, and it gets to an emotional truth. Really,
and it's good. Also kind of the first time you ever see Snoop show any sign of vulnerability of like right at the end. It's like, well, okay, maybe I'm a little insecure about my hair. Can you just reassure me before you show me?
Yeah. And also I think, you know,
it's like when my son, when I'm putting him to bed, he's like, he wants me to touch his back. Like I got to like rub his back when he's falling asleep. And that like sort of reminded me of that. Like she just sort of wanted him there to like mm-hmm. touch your back a little bit. And it was really sweet.
Are you gonna shoot your son in the back?
No, but you know, dying, falling asleep. It's like you want to be comforted when you're closing your eyes, I guess.
Yeah.
It reminded me of like sports, like the way that they talk about it as like a game, like in that way, it was sort of like a good game. Hey, good game. I know we were on the opposite team, but like good game.
You swatted that shit. I tried to. Yeah,
she's taken the L in a way that you're like, it's funny because it in retrospect, it makes the most sense. Because she's pissed in that moment where she's just like, you were never one of us. And then he like, you know, loads the gun, he cocks the gun, and she has this look on her face like, ugh. And it's just, you could see that look on her face is, fuck, I lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? And then she's like, all right, well, since I lost, let me just want to make sure that, you know, my hair looks good.
And it's sort of the inherent, like they all know that they're on a suicide mission. Like,
of course. They know where this ends. And in retrospect, it makes sense, you know, cause you watch the, every murder scene with the two of them when it's Chris and Snoop, and you see people like begging for their lives or like vomiting and stuff. They have this look of like, just, you're gonna die anyways, like why are you being weird about it? And and it's always like so sociopathic that you're like, Jesus, these guys don't give a fuck. And then so it actually I think is consistent with the idea that she's accepted her fate. And I also have a thing where I don't know about black hair, and so right. I assumed that when she said that, I was like, yeah, you know, probably a lot of work and money goes into making the hairstyle that she has, you know, like, so for her, she does give a shit about whether or not her hair looks good. She doesn't want to die, you know, and have everything look uneven and stuff. You know, so I don't know. I just assumed, I was like, that's probably a black people thing.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, it is. It's a great scene, and it's like great acting, mm-hmm. great acting. And again, we started off this series kind of talking shit about the acting. And now I'm like starting to take that back, you know, because
what acting did we talk shit about?
Well, I think in general, one of the things we said, it was that, you know, The Wire is known for being great at many things, but like being like, wow, look how good the acting is, has never been one of them.
I don't remember us ever saying that.
I feel like definitely said that.
I mean, I think that's true of season two, maybe, just in terms of,
I mean, mostly Pablo Schreiber,
but
yeah, we got to keep going after Pablo. You know
I'm
what?
Sorry, Pablo. Well, whatever. He's fine. His brother's Liev Schreiber.
Fine.
I'm sure he's
everything's
doing
good
great.
With Pablo. Yeah. But yeah, no, like, it's something I definitely said, you know, because I've always found the acting on it to be, it's so understated that it's hard to be like, oh, this is great acting.
See, you're one of these idiots. You're the reason it didn't get any Emmys. You were like, oh, this is
no,
a good,
true,
this isn't even acting. This is a documentary.
Yeah, they're not even acting. All the black guys really are in gangs.
Well, yeah, I think the first season too is a little more inconsistent. I think that they hadn't figured out who the good actors were and how to best like serve them yet.
Yeah.
Yes. I think by season two, I started taking back that critique. I believe when I, you know, especially after like the Ziggy Sobotka and Frank Sobotka, like visiting hours at the prison scene, I was like that. Yeah. I was like, okay, this show does have some of the greatest acting, but yeah, no, just it's so good. Like Felicia Pearson playing Snoop and doing that scene, just wonderful. Just a great, great acting scene. And Michael, you know, played by Tristan. I was gonna say Stewart, but that's me thinking of Kristen Stewart. Tristan the Wire. I think Tristan Wilds. Yes. He did great. And that, you know, after he shoots Snoop, he runs over to Dookie and Bug and collects them. Dookie is watching Dexter on TV.
So good. Yeah, I love the other. I mean, there was an earlier sort of diss at Deadwood, and this was just like another beautiful underhanded swipe at Dexter.
Yeah.
Yo, there's a serial killer and he only kills other serial killers.
Yeah, that's pretty great. Yes. Yeah. And then Michael takes him away and, you know, drops Bug off at his aunt's and then says goodbye to Dookie. And they have a goodbye scene that, again, just like that broke me. I was like, this is so good. Just because, you know, at this point, you've come to love these characters and you do view them as like, you don't view them as acting as like you view them as the kids they are. It's just, it's that effective. And
I also think it hits different, after you're a dad.
I think so too. Yes. That for sure is what's going on.
You remember that one day summer pass? We threw them piss balloons at them terrace boys.
I do. I saw that episode.
Yeah. School started. That's a good episode. We could rewind it.
You know,
we could watch that again right now.
I took a beat down from them boys. I don't even throw a shadow on it. That was the day y'all bought me ice cream off the truck. Mm. You remember, Mike?
Don't.
See you around, Mike.
See you, dude.
So fucking good.
Uh-huh. Writing too. Yeah, I don't even throw a shadow on it. Like, never heard that phrase before.
Yeah,
works
but understand
perfectly.
It.
I know.
Yeah,
I understood it instantly, and I was like, "Oh wow, it's a good way to say that."
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah,
it's
and the way
so good.
Michael doesn't remember it because he's like murdered 20 people since then. So
yeah,
like,
right.
Why
yes.
would I? Sorry, I don't remember.
He is
our little childish games.
Yes, he's like, oh, you mean the before time before I was monstrously traumatized yes. by doing multiple murders? No, I don't remember getting ice cream and throwing piss balloons, but it sounds fun. Yeah. So yeah, that. Is the last we see of Dookie is he's like walking into like drug alley.
He also it's a really good like subtle thing where he like sees the guy shooting up and turns around for a second, but Michael's gone. Like he has that moment of doubt where he's like, "Fuck it, maybe I just go with Michael and roll the dice." And then it's too late.
Yeah, Michael's already gone, and then he just walks in, and you know. This is going to be one of them, He's crossed the crossroads.
It's like, oh, this guy might be a junk man in more ways than one. Yeah. Am I right?
He's not just an A-rabber. He's doing that A-rabian.
He's A-jabber.
A-jab. There we go. There we go. That was good. That was good. Yeah. Thank God for you. and yeah, so that is, that's what happens there. And yeah, that is pretty much the episode. Save for a few moments. Are there some things that I missed? A favorite, a least favorite? Go ahead, Vince.
There was, I'm trying to remember the exact line. I think it was Gus talking to to one of his other people at the
paper. Said, I have a problem. Like, yeah, I have a problem. That's common in men your age.
That's common in men your age, yeah.
Yeah, that's funny.
Nice little moment.
Yeah, yeah. That was good. Brent, anything?
There's a couple. One just little one is I think the Kima's doing really good face acting when she goes in to tell Daniels what's going on. You can just see something's going on. She's doing a really good job. But then the other part is during the conversation. Well, I just love that Freeman and Clay Davis are like, it's just great to see those two actors together. They're both,
I know.
They're such fun characters.
It makes you wish there was more between them. Yeah.
But there's also the part where Clay is bragging about bleeding Stringer Bell, and you can see he says, oh, this guy Bell, and you can see Freeman like, huh, oh, you motherfucker.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, I think that was some of Isaiah Whitlock's best acting in that scene.
Yes,
this is when he's sort of getting real. I mean, I know it's because he's finally dropped the politician facade that he usually has. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. It might be the only time you see it, because the only time you see Isaiah Whitlock is when he's like code switching from one thing to another. Yeah. One thing is,
but he's still grandstanding in those scenes.
He is still grandstanding. He is still, but I mean, he's the perfect politician in that like everything is a code switch. He has no actual genuine self. Mm-hmm. But that is probably the closest you see to it.
Yeah, the closest you see to
is him admitting
himself
to crimes.
Oh no, I was gonna say it's when he says you could buy a round, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's when the closest
you get to seeing the actual Clay Davis is like, just buy me a drink, buddy.
Yes. So we're gonna find out more what happens with Clay Davis in the next episode and what his information leads to, as well as in this episode Bubbles. You see him finally share about Sherrod, which is just another great acting scene that you know, it's just like, it's just great.
As the audience, is this the first time we hear his actual name?
I think so, but
I don't know.
Maybe
when he was a snitch, I think we heard it.
Oh, yeah, okay. Maybe yeah, we heard it. Yeah, but it's hard to know. It's the first time that, you know, Steve Earle has heard it.
Yeah.
So. So the bubble stuff, we get to see more of what happens with that in the next episode. Just a couple of moments. One, a little bit of Hurricane Carve in this, and I just love when they're like, there's not much between them, but if we have a scene with them together, they have to explicitly talk about fucking each other's mouths. And
that was one sweet bus you people put on Marlo Stanfield. My number, right? I mean, it definitely smells like a Lester Freeman wired to heaven. Man, watch the news, saw all that dope on the table. Square cough, I was fully erect.
Your dick got hard? How could you tell?
Because the head was popping out of the back of your neck.
Oh, you guys. Fuck already.
Another piece of writing that I enjoyed in that scene where he's like, you know, I really missed these post-shift parties or whatever. And he's like, you haven't missed one since you got here or something like that.
Yeah, that was good.
I get it. It's a double meaning.
Herc has one other funny line when he's talking to Levy, and he's like, apparently they were doing a wire. They got the number. Nobody knows how he got it.
Who knows? Who knows here? Yeah. And so, like, Levy's trying to piece together what exactly happened. At this point, he doesn't believe there's a wire because they say there is a CI. But then I think he starts realizing an illegal wiretap is what happened once Herc mentions that there is some sort of wire that is not in the reports. Another thing in terms of Augie, it's the characters that we say hi and bye to. Naaman comes back for just a second. Naaman and Bunny.
Yeah.
And Naaman is now a debate guy. He is a debate pervert, and he is on stage, you know, talking about HIV and AIDS. And
he's
I have a
master debater. Yeah.
He's a master. Very good. Is it, did you come up with it? and I have a clip of that that I want to play it.
It's a fight HIV and AIDS around the world, but only HIV and AIDS, 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 HIV and AIDS.
I don't know why I did this, guys.
I thought you were going to rap over it. It was good.
I mean, I could. Yo, what up? I have HIV and AIDS, sucking on dick, wearing Band-Aids. Okay. So...
You rhymed AIDS with AIDS. Genius.
I said Band-Aids.
Well, sure. I mean, it's got a hyphen in there. I don't know.
Shut up. Oh, I never thought. You're right. I thought it was Band-Aids. D-A-D-E-S.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's a rhyme. Yeah. And that's what happens in the episode. That's the episode.
That's actually, you know what's funny is I have a neighbor. And for, I think I've lived here for almost 4 years now. Yeah. And I thought his name was Doug Ray. And then I accidentally got, or Amazon brought me one of his packages. And I realized it's Doug Gray, like the color gray. And
oh,
I was
shit.
Like, oh, wow. I mean, you could see how I would, that'd be like if my name was Vince Smancini and
yeah.
no one knew it until
yeah.
4 years.
Well, my name, my full name is Matt Hulieb. Anyways, if I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, solid B plus. Vince, what did you give this episode?
Yeah, I think again, one of the penultimate episodes are always some of the best. So this is like one of the best episodes of one of the best TV shows of all time, and you know that adds up to a solid B plus in my.
Oh my God! And Brent Flyberg, what did you give this episode? You had to give a letter grade.
You're not gonna believe it, but I gotta give it a B plus.
Oh,
wow!
Man.
Wow!
Man.
Bold so, and yet validating.
Mm-hmm. Yes, completely. And it's a solid B plus episode of The Wire and a solid A plus episode of Pod Yourself The Wire. Brent Flyberg, thank you for producing this podcast this whole time.
No problem.
Yeah.
And also, where can people find you and what do you want to plug?
You can find me on Instagram at Brent Flyberg. If you live in LA, follow me on Instagram. I'll post about shows. Come to some shows.
Okay. So please follow him on Instagram and go to his shows. Thank you so much. And now it's time for the fucking Wires.
Shout outs.
Patreon.com/fratcastboyo. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. Sorry. I gotta piss so bad. All right. And here are the shout outs for this week. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them.
Oh, shit.
Here we go. First is Ryan.
Hold on,
Sweet.
I gotta see it. I gotta see it visually. I gotta okay. look at the names on the list.
Scroll.
Okay, I'm scrolled. I'm properly
scrolled.
I gotta
shit out me pussy. So, first is Ryan Sweeney.
Oh, more like Sweeney Todd. He called this guy the demon barber of Fleet Street.
Love it. Very mm-hmm. good.
Yeah.
Second, Drew Landsman.
Whoa. Call this guy the detective for obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons. Next is Thomas Lunny.
Lunny? This sounds like Lummy, because that's the sound that Matt has convinced me means eating butt.
Onomatopoeia for eating butt, yeah, that's right.
And that's going to turn into a nickname that's really good.
The piss and the poo is going to come out at the same time.
Call this guy Analingus, yeah.
Analingus, great name.
He'll love that.
Yeah.
Next is Graham Kemley.
I love the way the Brits spell Graham. It's all like A-E-M-E. It's such a
weird people. Island of fucking freaks. I love you, Britain.
We call this guy Bread Pie.
Hey, Bread Pie.
Bread Pie.
Next one is a guy who I couldn't get any other name than Deadeye Nick, and I mm-hmm. think we're just Nick, and you come up with a nickname.
We call him Gritty.
Okay,
you know,
I
the
like
mascot?
It
because he's got the googly. Anyway,
oh yeah, one of the one eyes is dead.
It's
I get
stupid.
It.
Stupid. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And finally, just one name once again, and you're gonna have to make a street name from just one name.
Mm.
Ben.
Yeah, we call this guy Delaware. You know why?
Why?
What's the capital of Delaware?
Ben.
No, it's Dover. Ben. Oh, Ben Dover. Yeah, you get it. You guys get it. Right. Yeah.
That's very good. That's very, very good.
I don't know if it's good, but.
And dims your street names for the episode, Bumbo Clot. Sorry, I'm just doing everything I can to not think about the piss and poo. If you want to hear your street name, you've got literally one more chance to do it. Probably two, because we're also going to do a mailbag episode. But please let us know if you haven't heard your name. Email us. Frogcast@gmail.com. Patreon.com/Frogcast. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everybody. Thanks again so
much.
Guys,
we didn't talk about the bridge at all. Should we talk about the bridge?
Oh,
I know you gotta pee.
Shit. Oh,
we can
so much
talk about
it.
We can talk about the last episode.
There'll be a whole episode about that.
I know. I realized that we need to do that. But also, this episode comes out like 3 weeks after the bridge collapsed anyway. Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, if you come at the king, you best not miss.
Oh, Lord, can you hear me? From buried underground, you curse my name. I wasn't formed. And said I'm not a man for this town. Yeah, the MCU just took us down. Got Cheese, Chris, Monk, and Marlo downtown. Monk is saying, what if Michael Lee is a snitch? Mentions Omar calling Marlo a bitch. My name in the street. Tell me what that dick suck said about me. Monk tries to reassure him he was just talking shit. But Marlo will remind him my name. Marlo soldiers look down at the ground. If Omar Stark can shed, what use is the crown? Let every person know that word did not reach me. Sucky, pokey, dicky, my name is
Marlo.
Shoot a pigeon. I give a pigeon a message and he sends it on home and then he flies back. Yeah, motherfucker. This is the last, second to last one. And have fun.
What a bitch, Marlo. What a bitch, Marlo.
Monk is my name, L.A.M.S. Bentley. What a
fun. Yeah, good ass song. That guy got a lower voice though. At this point, I guess I'm never gonna have a low voice. I'm always gonna have this little bitch voice. It's fine, I guess. I always thought when I get older, I have a nice low voice and I stop sounding like a bitch. Anyways, see you next week for the exciting conclusion of Wires, the TV show. Podcast. Let's do this. Let's fucking do the second to last, bitch. Second to last before we move on to We don't know yet. Alf. All right, let's do this.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.